From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Well, it's Christmas Eve, but no rest for the wicked, because we are here. It's The Dice Men Cometh again on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Mark.
And Garth.
And now, Garth.
Yes.
We were going to have a bit of a discussion about a topic that's quite hot amongst Australian gamers at the moment.
Yes.
And that is the subject of a certain game store, online and physical store.
Yes.
In the Melbourne area that's been having a few problems with orders, a lot of venting on Board Game Geek.
Mm. Yes.
But we were wondering why we hadn't heard back from them, and then you discovered... Where was the email that you sent them?
Well, it was sort of in my outbox.
So it never actually got sent. And then, of course, I was chasing you up trying to find what had happened. And my stupid autocorrect, which always catches me out, had autocorrected the name of the game store to Muslims.
Yes.
Or Muslims, if you like. So here's me saying, are we going to hear back from the Muslims? Do you think they'll be angry? So maybe it's better we don't talk about
that. Exactly. But you've probably got the NSA on your back now.
Perhaps I have. Garth, we've got a good show lined up for you tonight.
Have we ever? Yeah. So, look, we're going to start, as tradition dictates, by going into what we've been playing this week and seeing how long we can rabbit on for about one or two games. We then have an interview with a gentleman whose name is Chris. Now, Chris is part of what was the group that was doing the Sydney Toy and Games Expo,
right,
which unfortunately was cancelled this year.
Yeah.
They've got some pretty exciting news for what potentially might be happening next year, so you better stay tuned for that.
That's
because
right.
That's pretty big.
And this is like a live simulcast, because we've got the interview with Chris, and I believe also they are going to be putting out a media release, I believe, almost coincides exactly with the timing of
According to their Twitter feed, 7 p.m. right now is when they're announcing, so we'll have to try and keep them track on that. We are also going to talk about some big news in the world of Asmodee and Days of Wonder, etc., and then we might have to spoil a bit of Pandemic at the end.
We've got all that and more, but now for you, some seasonal cheer.
He was born in Asia Minor. A comrade, Jesus Christ.
That was Kev Carmody's take on the guy whose birthday gets celebrated tomorrow, Comrade Jesus Christ. Very interesting. It's very, that word that starts with I, to see the discussion these days about, you know.
There are lots of discussions about you know.
There are. And other things that are happening all this time of year. It's The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. And I should just shut up. We should talk about games, Garth.
Should we ever? So we will get to the exciting news about the Sydney Toy and Games Expo in a moment. Because during that talk, they have announced on Twitter. So that's pretty exciting news. But let's get to what we have actually been playing this week. Now, we have been playing something that is not a board game.
No, and this all started, believe it or not, when Leon was fishing in the Facebook group for buying and selling board games in Australia about Time Stories.
That's right.
You know, another great narrative-driven game like Pandemic Legacy that we've been talking so much about and we'll be talking about later on in the show.
Yes.
And whether he should buy Time Stories, whether it was worth it, whether it wasn't. And there was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, backwards and forwards, some very much in the camp of, oh, it's the most amazing game ever, you know. It's so story-driven. There's nothing like it. Other people saying, you know, it's not worth the money because it's so limited.
And he did have someone yipping in his ear, though.
Yeah.
Going, you should buy it.
Yeah,
buy
that's
for me.
Right.
Buy.
Yeah, well,
Anyone that looks exactly like you?
No,
fit
no.
That description?
I don't troll those internet forums. Anyway, of course, I was encouraging him to buy it because it sounds like a fantastic game.
Yes.
But in the meantime, was it me who suggested we should just play Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective?
I think you did, because he has had this game for, I don't know, a better part of a year now. When Shut Up and Sit Down did a review of this game, and it must have been 18 months ago now,
yeah,
they pretty single-handedly stopped this game being available everywhere. because everyone went and bought it.
Yes.
And that makes games hard to get when you're on an island that's pretty small attached to a slightly larger island that's on the opposite side of the world from where all the games are. So anyway, Leon, as he likes to tell everyone, spends a lot of money on games. So fortunately, he spent some money on this and got the 2014 edition of Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective.
Yeah.
This is a game that's been around since 1981, which would be older than Leon, I would imagine.
Yes, and the sad thing is also Garth.
Yeah, you've played the original,
I have played
haven't you?
The 1981 edition, although not back then. A friend of mine had it, I think when I first started getting into board games, you know, in the mid-2000s, he pulled this out of his closet and went, oh, we should give this a go. And at the time, I was like, oh, my God, there's a newspaper in this game. There's a phone book in this game. I was blown away.
Yeah.
And then, lo and behold, a new edition was released, and I was like, yeah, I hope they're not all the same. Not that I can remember what happened in those missions, but I just remembered being fantastic. And I have a copy of 221B Baker Street, which is another old Sherlock Holmes game, which is a little bit like this, but it has a roll and move mechanic where you're moving around London, going to locations, sort of like you are in Sherlock, but you're not just doing it on a paper map where you say, okay, we go here. You've actually got to roll the dice and move around to find the clues. And the clues are, it's more like a cryptic crossword or puzzles that you're trying to solve to find the name of the murder and things. So it's not, there's not much of a deduction element. It's more like a puzzle.
Excellent.
So this is your true Sherlock Holmes deduction-based game, that's for
definitely.
Sure.
So this game, it's been around since 1981, but we played the 2014 edition. It plays from 1 to 8. So you can play this as a solo, according to Board Game Geek. They recommend it with two players, so a little intimate affair. We played it with three because we're just a little bit out there. It does take anywhere from 1 to 2 hours, but there's no time limit on this. You can scream through it if you are Sherlock himself and you need very, very little information, or you can very slowly muddle through it as we did.
very slowly.
But look, this game has a lot of pedigree. It won the Spielers Yaras in 1985. So, you know, it was reprinted for a reason. And it is also a game that I just have to tip my hat to the designers of this. And I think, how bloody long must it have taken them to create the 10 scenarios in this game? There's Raymond Edwards, there's Suzanne Goldberg and Gary Grady. Their heads must have just melted as they were creating this game, and I just applaud them.
Well, certainly it's in the league of something like Tales of the Arabian Nights with its 3,000 paragraphs and its great big thick book that weighs kilos. It must have been taken a similar amount of time to put it together. Each scenario is its own little booklet, so you're not spoiling anything for yourself for later scenarios. Look, I'm not going to tell you what I thought of it yet.
No. Well,
let's talk a bit more about it.
What is in the box? Because it's a relatively compact box, but that's belying what's in it, because in it is a whole world of mental pain and anguish and joy and excitement. Yes. But yeah, look, there are 10 cases, and only after playing it, and Leon explaining it, did we sort of understand that you do need to play these in a chronological order, because more information will come out as the game progresses. But you get a clue book specific to your case. You get a London directory booklet, which has all of the people in all of the cases in their potential locations. Now, some of these characters might have 1, 2, 3 plus possible locations that they're going to be at, because there is a day-night cycle, and they could be at a certain place at the daytime and a certain place in the middle of the night.
Yeah, and they could be home, they could be out at the club,
they could,
or at a restaurant, or at the theatre.
Or their place of employment, who knows. And then they also have, in that directory, all the different buildings. Now, there might be hospitals and factories and pubs and, I don't know, plants and all these kind of things. So this in itself is a real, I guess, a tome to work your way through and find out, all right, what am I looking for, and then where am I going to find them? You've then got, as you mentioned, the big pull-out map of London itself, which is an incredible resource if you know how to use it. And then you get the casebook on your particular case with some more little notes, some more little tidbits to be able to hopefully help you put this case together. Now, the case will start with you basically reading the I don't know.
Like a setting.
Like the setting, you know. You're going in and you will experience Sherlock Holmes's wonder just a smidge, potentially.
Yes.
Because what you are trying to do is kind of work with Sherlock, but beat Sherlock and ultimately try and get the right answers. Because at the end of the case, you are going to be asked a series of questions, some of which will be who done it and how did they do it and where did they do it. But some of them will be other little pieces of information that you would have hopefully got along the journey that is this case. And that's how you determine your score. You are pegged against Sherlock, so that's a pretty high bar.
Yes.
And, well, let's start talking about how we went.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, so I think what you play, is it the Baker Street Irregulars, who are basically friends of Sherlock Holmes, associates. So obviously, you know, you're trying to solve it as well. There are one of the other resources that you've got with the phone or the street directory and the phone directory is you've got places like the coroners and the criminologist and the cabbies and the street urchins and Sherlock Holmes himself. So you can even go and visit them and ask them for information. Because obviously the large mechanic of this game is going to locations, which then makes you turn to a particular paragraph or... If there may not be a paragraph, if that place actually isn't relevant.
Yep.
And then you read that bit of information, which then leads you somewhere
further.
Yeah.
Hopefully progresses your case. Yeah. So, look, we played case number one. I don't think we're going to spoil it because this is such a game where you've only got 10 cases in there. We're not going to spoil 10% of it. But needless to say, our experience with this was one of excitement, confusion... feeling really clever,
for a while.
Feeling incredibly thick, and then at the end, that's how
the
you do it
kind
of moment, and we just realised that that's why we're not private investors.
That's right. Now, I certainly wouldn't be spoiling it to say, Garth, we didn't get a positive score.
Well, we came second to Sherlock. Which was good. Now, Sherlock's score is 100, basically.
Yeah.
So, because he would solve the case. And I guess how the scoring works is every location you visit, you're going there and you're getting some information, hopefully. But at the end of it, when you say, okay, we know who's done this crime, whatever, we say, okay, stop. That's when we will find out how many locations Sherlock has visited.
Mm.
Our score will be pegged against that, generally horribly. Then his score is 100. And basically, our aim is to try and get as close to that 100 mark as possible. Now, our score, after we tallied up all the locations that we visited, our answers to the 8 questions that finished this case to let us know how good we were.
Yes.
Was minus 55.
Yes, it was pretty bad. it could be a record, in fact.
Yeah, it was pretty horrible. But look, this game, I guess game is an interesting term because it's really just a mental exercise and the collective enjoyment of sitting around a table with a couple of your mates trying to figure it out as you go is probably more than just a game,
and
I think.
It had a slight role-play feel to it.
Yeah.
Except when you go to a location, you read the spiel... And that's it. So you can't say, oh, but hang on, I want to ask him a particular question. So there's no interactivity and there's no ability to get extra information.
Exactly.
Apart from what you read, which is, I guess, their intention is to give you what you need to know.
Mm.
But, and maybe that's why we were so far off the pace. So I would have liked to be able to get some supplementary information. But, and the other thing we sort of totally missed was we didn't quite realise... how much of a resource
the map was,
yeah. And that it wasn't just a pretty piece of paper showing how far it was from A to B and where the locations were. Probably enough said about that.
Yeah, well, I think we used the map as just the visual representation of the directory.
Yeah.
Which is we look in the directory, it's here, therefore we know which part of the town it is and how it relates to every other sort of that area we visited. But that was it.
And
we can certainly use the map in other ways.
Yeah, we didn't realise that not every building is listed in the directory that you may need to go and you may need to go and walk the streets a bit.
Exactly right.
But look, I can't wait to play the second case.
Mm, yeah, and hopefully not feel so stupid. But look, we played this game in a smidge under 2 hours. Now, we did record this triumph of deduction and pain. So I think it's going to be... Well, I think it has been now edited and is going to be out there on the podcast eventually as some bonus content if you choose to listen.
Yeah, so, and obviously, look, if you've played the game or if you've got no intention of playing the game, then feel free. If you are thinking about playing the game, well, obviously it won't spoil much of the answer because we were so far off the pace. But, you know, be warned, and obviously it says that there. But, yeah, look, if you want to listen to us make total idiots of ourselves by just being stupid for an hour and a half,
yeah,
we'll put that up for you.
Exactly right. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this whole experience. I'm looking forward to getting it to the table again. My only concern is we're getting into a whole bunch of games where these are episodic. How are we going to play the new stuff if we just keep playing Pandemic and we play this and we're just starting an Imperial Assault campaign? Oh, my gosh.
Anyway, look, this game did leave me feeling like I did want to give Mr. Smarty Pants Sherlock Holmes a... kiss with the fist. You hit me once, I hit you back.
Whew. That was a bit of Florence and the Machine with Kiss with a Fist. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. Now, breaking news. Mark has an interview with Chris from who was a part of the Sydney Toy and Games Expo, but is now a part of something else.
So joining me tonight on the Dice Men Cometh, we've got Chris... from the group who formerly bought us the Sydney Toy and Game Expo. And Chris, I believe you've got some exciting news coming for us about your events in 2016.
Yes, I do. And thanks for having me on, Mark.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah. So, as many people might have noted, the Sydney Toy and Game Expo didn't quite happen in 2015. There were a number of factors behind that. But we have been hard at work for just about the past year, looking at what worked in previous Toy and Game Expos and what didn't. And so we've pulled all that back together, and we're launching a new purely tabletop gaming event in July 2016 at the Bankstown Sports Club called LFG.
Now, I'm sure you're going to tell us what it stands for. So I remember we spoke to Charles Bishop, and look, the expo... you know, it had a few incarnations in Canberra, but in Sydney it ran, I think, 2012 to 2014. It was quite successful. What does LFG stand for? And is the function still, or the event still going to have the same focus as previously, so toys and games?
Okay, so LFG, if you're an online gamer, you might recognise that acronym as Looking for Group. So anybody who's trying to find a group to hook up with in... an online game, World of Warcraft or Destiny, we'll be familiar with that. And that's really the same sort of atmosphere we're trying to bring to our event. And we also think that LFG can stand for Looking for Gamers, essentially. And we're trying to build an event where people can come together, meet new players from communities they haven't actually encountered before, build lifelong friendships, discover new games, new tournaments that they fall in love with. So that's an absolute focus of our new event, as opposed to a pure retail event, for example.
When you say tabletop only, are we including card games, obviously board games? What about miniatures, collectible card games, things like that?
Absolutely. So we've removed the toy part of the Toy and Game Expo because that was, for us, the most problematic part of getting the Toy and Game Expo off the ground. Because, as we found, while board games, as we know, have been going through a massive resurgence for the past, let's say, 10 years, and which is only accelerating, toys have not experienced that same revival. And so a lot of our toy demonstrators and retailers and sponsors have been having their own troubles and have been moving more into video games, whereas our board game demonstrators, retailers, and patrons just had a great time. So... that's what we've decided to focus on, and that does include card games, tabletop wargaming, miniature painting, hardcore competitions, or, you know, easier Euro-style competitions, social gaming, everything encompassed inside that, the big umbrella of tabletop.
And you mentioned tournaments as well, is that right?
Yes. So we've run the Australian Board Gaming Championships for the past 5 years. moving them from Canberra to Sydney, and then this year we had to hold them in Melbourne. And they've covered Carcassonne, Ticket to Ride, Catan, Rummy Cub, and there's one other that's right on right on the tip of my tongue. So we've run some very heavy competitions with large prize pools, which people have taken to, but we'd like to expand that and make our tournaments much more accessible as well. So we'll definitely run large-scale tournaments for the really serious gamers, but we'd like to also run competitions and tournaments that get almost first-time players into the business. So quick entry on the day tournaments for collectible card games like Netrunner or miniature games. Some we'd have some X-Wing, we'd have some Warhammer in there, for example, or some War Machine that people can really just jump in and play for the first time. So small competitions with small prizes that will inspire people to, you know, discover something that they'll love for the rest of their lives.
Obviously, LFG is something, as you said, a lot of people are going to know. I must admit, I always wondered why Sydney Toy and Game Expo didn't go with something cool like Stag X or something like that, although you might have got a bit of a different crowd.
There's a couple connotations there.
Yeah, and of course, Sexpo was already taken.
I believe we did actually have Toys Expo registered for a short while, and then we looked at that and put two and two together and walked away. So, yeah, we needed something a little bit snappier, and I think LFG, not only snappier, but it really does encompass what we're trying to do here. We're not an expo. While there will be a retail component and there'll be lots of demonstration booths from local designers and publishers and retailers showing off their tabletop products, of course, that's not the core of what we're trying to do. We're trying to give people a great gaming experience over an entire weekend that they'll be talking about for a long time to come, and let them leave with a whole bunch of new phone numbers and Facebook contacts, people that they're going to be gaming with every weekend for the next year. This event has been planned in conjunction with Sydney Gamers. So from the first, we started talking to all the little community groups and board gaming groups around Sydney and asked what they wanted to see. And they told us very plainly what they loved about our previous events and what they didn't, and we've taken all of it on board very openly. So, for example, they've asked for longer gaming hours, late gaming or midnight gaming. They want a bigger board game library. They want, if they're over 18s, they want to be able to have a beer with their mates as they play around, et cetera, et cetera. They want good transportation, good parking. Everything that they've listed, we've taken into account. On top of that, we really want to get all the scattered community groups that are all over Sydney coming together to get involved in LFG, to the point where we're happy to set aside tables at the expo for community groups to set up and invite people to join, pass out their contact information, bring new members into their regional gaming groups, spread the word about their smaller tournaments or events, because at its heart, LFG is about empowering all the smaller groups as well. We're not trying to steal everybody else's thunder. We're trying to push the power back out to them by pulling them all together for one great weekend.
Sounds like a great opportunity.
Yeah, so if there are any small gaming groups out there in Sydney who would like to get in contact with us, please do. I'll pass on our contact details at the end of the interview, but chuck us an email, hit us up on Twitter or Facebook, and we'd love to talk with you.
I know in all gaming scenes, there are lots of little disparate groups around the place that never really find out that other groups of similar people exist, and this is the sort of larger event that certainly can bring those groups together. Now, is this going to be the Sydney chapter of the Australian Board Gaming Championships as well?
That depends on the timing, because the Australian Board Gaming Championships are actually officiated by a separate body. We manage and run them, but in the end, there is somebody else behind the scenes. So we'll be discussing that with them very soon and working out how we can best accommodate their needs. We do plan, or this is very tentative plans, but we do plan for LFG to expand beyond Sydney in the coming years, in which case we can expand those same board gaming competitions and championships outwards, perhaps to Canberra, Brisbane or Melbourne.
Hobart, of course.
Yep, we'll just keep working our way south. until we wind up on your doorstep, really. Hobart's my hometown, actually, so wouldn't mind coming back.
Well, we'll certainly have you back any time, that's for sure, and the event. So obviously there's going to be some more information coming shortly around the exact details of the event. You're going to make the big announcement sometime shortly. Where's the best place for us to get more information?
Yeah, information will come out as we have information to reveal. Right now I can tell you that it's happening over July 9th and 10th at the Bankstown Sports Club, and we're going to hopefully be spread over two levels at the club, filling up really every space that they have free. For more details as they come out, people can find us on Twitter under LFG Australia, on Facebook under LFG Australia, or at our website, which is lfg-oz.com.au.
That's fantastic, Chris. Look, we really look forward to hearing about this event some more. Maybe we can even catch up with you again in the weeks coming up to the event. But in the meantime, we'll certainly be letting all our listeners know about it. And look, thanks so much for filling us in. Say g'day to Charles for us. We look forward to hearing more about this event and about your other upcoming events.
Yep, well, I look forward to having more to share with you. So, yeah, as soon as things develop, we'll be knocking on your door.
Lovely. Thanks so much, Chris. You take care.
Well, that was Mark talking to Chris from Now Looking for Gamers, LFG yeah. Australia. So that sounds really exciting.
And we, as that interview was on, basically, we saw the new Facebook page for that event go live.
Yeah, exactly. So
all
we have to...
all happening right here.
Yeah, we have to sort of say that that interview was pre-recorded, what, 2 weeks ago now? So we've sort of had to keep a bit of down low on that just to make sure that, you know, we waited for them. But fantastic news, another board gaming event in Australia in 2016. It's going to be a big year. Let's get some songs.
All right. Holly Throsby with her dulcet tones as the night dies on the Edge Radio program called The Dice Men Cometh. On 99.3 FM.
There you go. That was smooth.
It
just like Holly Throsby.
It was. Now, obviously all the LFG stuff is happening. Another big thing that's been announced in the last, week or so?
Yeah, it'll be a week, I reckon, now.
Is Asmodee, as we know, originally a French company.
Oui.
Took over Days of Wonder. Also took over Fantasy Flight Games.
Mm-hmm.
And now... one of the largest games, if not groups, if not the largest group in our hobby.
Yep.
And they made some, well, you know, some people would say they're exciting announcements. Some people might say they're making them a bit nervous. But Garth, talk us through what was announced.
Yeah, so this was announced on the 17th of December, where the North American branch of Asmodee basically said that they're going to restructure their business model, which is kind of important when they are looking after all of Fantasy Flight, all of Days of Wonder, and all of the Asmodee titles.
And Asmodee does a lot of distribution of a whole bunch of European games into the... English, I mean, it's the North American market, but really it's the English-speaking market.
Exactly right. So basically they're going to consolidate those three brands and all the games and just consolidate them all under the brand of Asmodee North America. They are also making quite a few changes to how they are going to be conducting business in terms of retailers, online distributors, retailers who have online distribution networks, and... it's caused quite a big reaction from a whole bunch of people and community groups and gaming clubs and retailers and all of that about what it essentially means. Because it is when you've got a publisher that big making such big changes, which we'll get to in a moment, there's certainly ripples that are causing, well, that are happening all over the
hobby. Yeah, absolutely. And the interesting thing is seeing the wide variety of opinions about this, because you've certainly got the whole spectrum of people thinking this is an amazing thing they're doing, right through to people thinking, you know, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to the hobby, and everything in between.
Exactly. So let's start with what they are going to be doing, because that would be making sense. First of all, what they're going to do is they're going to consolidate all their distributors just to five within the US. So they're only going to be giving their game to these five distributors to then be able to get them out and about to the rest of the gaming retailers. What they are also going to do, and they're going to sort of make sure that the friendly local game shops are authorized sellers. So it's not just any fly-by-night shop that's going to be able to sell them. They have to go through a process to become Asmodee authorized, which is a pretty, you know, important thing, I guess. You know, us as games buyers want to make sure that we're buying them from a reputable company that was going to be around, yeah, that we're able to talk to and have a relationship with. So that I consider is a really good point.
And Fantasy Flight did do that to some degree, because obviously they have a lot of products that have tournaments and things like the Living Card Games, X-Wing, all that sort of stuff. There's a lot of flow-on activity with those. So yep, they did sort of have a bit of a model that did that already, but this is obviously taking it to the nth degree.
Exactly right. And this is where it starts to become really different, because what they are doing as part of having these retailers be an Asmodee authorized seller, they obviously have to sign a whole bunch of terms and conditions. Now, the very first one that we're going to talk about is their channel of sale clause, which, without going into jargon and lots of reading, essentially means that if you own a bricks and mortar friendly local game shop, selling your games over the counter is fine. But if you have an online presence, that is not fine, and you cannot anymore, or when this comes into effect, sell any of their products through your online store at all.
Yeah.
Now, this has probably been one of the biggest causes of consternation from a whole bunch of different groups, because you've got a lot of the purchasers of games, i.e. me as the general consumer and you, saying, what's that going to do to prices? Because a lot of us have bought games online because they are cheaper than going to my friendly local game shop. How's that going to affect my pure dollars and cents value out of the game when they are forcing me to go to the retailer?
Yeah.
The other side of that is from the retailer perspective, which is great, because I can actually make a bit of money on, yes, my games, because there are so many online providers who can sell bulk and basically make tiny, tiny amounts of profit on a per unit basis, but because they're selling so much more than one local game shop in a corner in a, you know, a suburban area, they can just take massive amounts of market share through just sheer force of numbers.
Yeah, and look, I know we talk about so many times about how we ourselves walk that fine line as purchasers and also advocates for the industry. We walk that fine line where, you know, let's put Leon aside, because Leon does have infinite cash to burn, you know, but we don't have infinite cash to burn. You know, we want to support our local game stores because they are often the hubs of the hobby in our community. But at the same time, we want to get access to all the latest stuff and get it for a reasonable price.
Yeah.
And a classic example for me with this one is I was a little bit late getting into X-Wing.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I did the thing that I always did, which is, like, I have to buy all the expansions. And I remember I bought 3 or 4 X-Wing expansions from a group, I can't even remember their name, but I think it might have been in the UK,
mm-hmm,
with free shipping, and the cost price was pretty close to 50% what it was in our friendly local game, yep, store here. And, you know, I mean, at that price, I could not resist, yeah, and I did buy, as I said, like 3 or 4 of those expansions. And it got here in like just a couple of days. I mean, how can you fault that experience that I had there?
Exactly right. And that's going to be something that will change,
mm,
because they will retain an online presence themselves. However, they have made it very clear, because what they did after they put out this initial press release is a couple of days ago, they then put out essentially a Q&A to answer some of the more contentious issues.
Yeah, because that was the big one where it's at first glance, it really looked like almost like you're not going to be able to buy these games online anymore.
Correct.
Except, yeah, from maybe through like the Fantasy Flight website itself.
Yeah. So what they have said is that in terms of online, they're going to have, and I'm going to try and find this quote here. So, yep, okay. So basically, they are going to limit their online sales to work with a number of exceptional authorized online dealers. That's all. Now, they've said that they're going to limit this to around about half a dozen.
Mm.
So this is where these are going to be exclusively online retailers. So it cannot be a retail presence on a bricks and mortar store that has an online shop. it is an only online process, and they are only going to limit to about half a dozen, which, of course, will be heavily scrutinised, I'm sure, by the Asmodee lawyers. But that means that you'd still be able to get it online if you are regional or remote and you don't have a friendly local game store anywhere. You're still going to be able to get the games, but they're only, you're going to be limited to these couple of retailers. Now, the next thing that sort of popped up as a pretty major issue is that generally when games companies have done this in the past, because they're certainly not the first, is what they also impose is a minimum sell price on these games. So that what it's essentially doing is protecting their margin. It's also meaning that there's not going to be any ridiculous sales because there's going to have a absolute, we will not allow you to sell our games for anything less than that. And of course, a lot of gamers came up and said, rah, 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 what about things like Boxing Day sales and all of that? Mm. How am I going to get the games I want at a fantastic price? Not all the time, but just on occasional sales. Because I could be wrong. It's not been the first time. But I'm pretty sure that Eagle Griffin has an arrangement where games do not go below a certain price.
Yeah, like an MS.
Yeah, MRSP.
Minimum MSRP or something.
That one. Yeah. So essentially, Asmodee have said, no, we are not going to impose a minimum sell price. Retailers are more than welcome, once they've become an authorised seller, they're more than welcome to set prices as low as they want to get their market. But obviously, the fact that you need to be an authorised seller might have certain, who knows, more terms and conditions. So it's been quite an interesting week when it comes to our hobby, when you've got one of the largest, if not the largest publishers, coming out with a massive amount of inventory, and they're going to be really channeling it down the way that you can buy it. I think ultimately, though, in terms of growing our hobby, it's going to get more people into the game stores.
Yeah, I think
it has
right.
to, which is growing our hobby.
Yeah.
And look, you take a per unit issue and say it's going to cost me $5 more. Yeah, that might be annoying for some people. But overall, the experience of going into your game store, seeing it chock-a-block with a whole wall and wall and wall of board games, some of which you would never have seen before, and you go, I want to know about that one. Yes. How do I buy it? The experience you're going to get, knowing that you go to an authorized seller of this product who knows what they're talking about, surely the experience has got to be worth it.
Yeah, and as we said, the community building aspect, because, maybe not so much with Asmodee, but certainly with the Fantasy Flight, you know, they've got the supported events.
Yeah, the organized play.
The chapter packs, that's in the Game of Thrones. But, you know, you've got the LCG, so you've got regular stuff coming out. You've got the expansions for things like Descent. You've got X-Wing coming out and going absolutely gangbusters now with the new Star Wars. There's so much opportunity to get involved with the community through the gaming store. I mean, a lot of the gaming stores have tables, and it's great to see one of our, in fact, both of our friendly local game stores that we have in the Hobart CBD area, Good Games and Area 52, both have tables where you can play games, where you can meet people.
Mm-hmm. They have competitions almost every night of the week in some way, shape or form, and that is just a great community feeling.
Fantastic.
The only other thing that we need to mention is that there are a lot of online retailers who will be quaking in their boots with this. Because how do they know if they're going to be in the top 4 or 5 retailers who are considered exceptional as far as Asmodee are concerned to be able to sell their product? There are going to be a lot of companies that will just not be able to have this inventory anymore. So that obviously will be more of a developing issue when they have started to announce we are going to allow online sales of the product through X, Y, and Z.
And what I think it says, these new policies are taking effect.
It's going to happen as of January and then April.
Hang on, Garth.
Yeah.
It's taking effect on April the 1st, it says.
Yeah, I know.
Have they been pranking us this whole time?
No.
If they have, it's a beauty.
All right.
They're getting in very early.
They are.
We'll come back, and then it's going to be spoiler time because we are going to talk about Pandemic Legacy in our latest games, plural.
Ooh.
What we've been doing successfully and not so successfully. The fantastic Aussie group Spiderbait with Janet on lead vocals there. Calypso, you're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now, before we get into the spoiler-laden discussion of Pandemic Legacy, Garth, we've got a bit going on ourselves at the moment.
Have we ever? We have got our biggest competition ever, which is exciting. It's the 12 Games of Christmas. So we have been getting dozen of entries so far. So look, this competition, without sounding sort of, I don't know, egotistical or whatever, is massive. I haven't seen a little small town podcast release such a fantastic competition where you will win at least 12 games.
Absolutely. So, not all the not same all person. 12, yeah.
But there
so
are 12
opportunities
games.
To win games.
Exactly right. So in order for you to potentially win this competition, jump onto our Facebook page and have a look at the post titled The 12 Games of Christmas. Essentially, you need to put in and post onto the Facebook page a video, a photo, an audio file, a something file of you playing your games with your family, ideally in the Christmas spirit. Otherwise, you can always share the post on Facebook to your friends and family and fellow gamers, and you might get an entry that way as well.
And we're not allowed to say that on Facebook because
you
can't induce people to share your post by giving away prizes, but we are.
Exactly right.
Don't tell Mark Zuckerberg.
No. And then another way that we've been talking about, because so many of you listen via the podcast, would be to jump onto iTunes and give us a review.
Oh, yeah.
And look, we won't make you give us a 5-star review, but obviously it would be lovely. Anytime you put a review on that, you'll certainly be getting an entry or two. We'll have to figure that out. But I think maybe two entries is probably good for a review.
Yeah, and
it requires a bit of effort,
yeah, and
you
think? I think also, look, if you've got your non-Apple devices, you know, like I do, an Android device,
yep.
I know there are various podcast pages, recommending podcasts. I don't know how it works in Android world because I just get it off our website, obviously.
Yep.
But, you know, if there are places where you recommend podcasts or whatever and you do post somewhere like that as well, send us a message on the Facebook page,
yep,
or tweet us. Let us know you've done that. Probably need to tell us like your username and the same for the iTunes one so we can work out who you are. But we'll absolutely give you some entries for those as well.
Definitely.
Many ways to enter.
Indeed, indeed. So we are getting some more entries every day, which is fantastic. So yeah, jump on our Facebook page. Join us on, what is it, on Twitter? Follow us on Twitter or at Dice Men Cometh. Go into iTunes or whatever the Android tunes is and just search for Dice Men Cometh. I'm sure we'll pop up there. Give us a review. Obviously, we would greatly appreciate it. And you would graciously take some games off our hands.
Absolutely. Surely. And there's some really great games there, including the Magic the Gathering game that we reviewed recently.
Arena of the Planeswalkers.
We've got Star Realms.
Yep, we've got 101. I've been able to get a copy of Doshboard Golf,
which is
such a new game. It hasn't even been put onto Board Game Geek yet.
Amazing.
It is in the process of being approved. That's how new this game is. We've played it a couple of times.
Yeah.
We'll have to talk about it next week because we haven't got time this week.
We do have 12 great games for you.
Exactly
for sure.
Right. So there are heaps. Join our competition. You will be happy you did. Now.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler. We are now going to be talking about our third month of Pandemic Legacy, which is not surprisingly March.
Yes.
We are going to go into March having been victorious in February.
Yes, and January.
We're on a roll. So everything was looking peachy keen. And then March happened. And Mark, take it from there.
So we had a bit of stuff happening in March at the start. I mean, that's one of the great things about Pandemic Legacy is when you start a new month, you generally flip over, what are those cards called?
Legacy deck.
The card from the legacy deck, and it'll have a number of circles with numbers and letters in them. And then these are the packages, the stickers, the packages, the cards, the stuff you get to open, the new exciting stuff.
Mm.
So March we had three circles. One of those was a rule sticker.
Yep.
That talked about an additional type of structure that we hadn't come across before, military bases.
Yeah.
One of those was another group of stickers which put a new player ability on every player's card.
What?
About traveling from military bases. So basically for a free action, you can travel from one military base to another military
base. Not as a free action, but
you chuck out a card.
Yeah, exactly right. You don't have to fly. you don't have to chuck out a card that you're either in or going
like,
to.
So basically, if you've got a useless card, you can use that. However, the trick with that is that action's only available to players who have the little military icon on their card, which is a set of dog tags.
Yes.
Now, at the moment, we only had one character.
Yeah, the quarantine
that
specialist.
Had the dog tags, the quarantine specialist. Not surprisingly,
what?
The third thing we got was a new character, the operations specialist, who was also a military person. So yes. Now we've got two people that can travel between these military bases that we haven't built yet because we don't know about them. And we're like, oh, wonder what else is going to happen. What happened, of course, the next thing was we got to open up one of the eight boxes.
The big packets.
And what did it have? You'll never guess.
I'm going to say military bases.
Yes. Woo! It had military bases. So all of a sudden, we had these military bases that we could place. So you basically discard
a card
and build a you can build the structure.
Yeah.
So when you build the structure, you can choose for it to be a research station or a military base, quite similar. But then the operations specialist, he was able to do
a few more different abilities relating to that. He was able to basically go and build one everywhere that he went really, really easily, which was great. So he was able to build a military base, fly from military bases. He was incredibly powerful because one of the other things that came out in March was the fact that we didn't just have to find a cure for our three diseases.
Oh, yes, we had a new mission card. Objective. In fact, we had...
two.
Did we have... We ended up with a total of three mission cards. So the original one, which was to cure the three diseases that were curable, because we, of course, the
yellow
CODA
one is
disease, which in our game is yellow, we can't do anything with now. Then also you had to eradicate one disease that was... Did that come out in this one or the last one? Yeah, so that was a new mission card objective. That came out, an objective card that came out to eradicate one disease. And then there was a third objective card. Now, you only had to do two. You had to do the curing three diseases in one of the other two.
Yep.
The third one was to build six military bases, one in each region. Mm. So, you know, you've got like the six continents sort of thing.
And this was
probably lines on the map.
This was probably the first time that any of us had actually noticed that the board was divided up into six regions.
Maps and lines on the map that don't correspond to the colours.
Mm.
So that was the third thing. And straight away, you know, the discussion was around, oh, well, that one might be really easy because this operations specialist, he can do lots of stuff really quick.
Yep.
But then if we eradicate a disease, that's also good because one of the things we hadn't managed to do so far was to put down a positive mutation at the end of a game because we hadn't eradicated a disease at all. And that's one of the game end upgrades that you can do. What also came out, there was all these things that came out, was obviously a sticker that lets you add military bases, permanent military bases, as a game end upgrade, similar to the permanent research stations.
Yes.
So all these options coming out.
And we got some extra relationships.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Yeah, so we got another relationship or two that we were able to put into play, which also just made things a little bit more interesting.
And, you know, so now we've got an extra character, we've got these extra military bases, we've got extra objectives, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on.
Yeah.
So we thought, okay, this is going to be really interesting.
We didn't say interesting.
No, we said this is going to be really fun and exciting.
Exactly.
And then, Garth, it pretty much all went downhill from there, didn't it?
Yeah, well, look, the... When we started by doing our initial infection, where you start with the three cities that are going to have three cubes and then the three cities that are going to have two and the three that are going to have one, I'm not that great at maths, but I'm pretty sure that around 65 to 70% of the cards that we drew were all yellow.
I was going to say two-thirds.
Yeah, there we go.
We had so much yellow on the board. Now, remembering that yellow is our CODA disease
and we
can't cure, you can't even treat.
Exactly. So they are on the board permanently. We are up a certain creek without a paddling device.
That's right.
So
luckily, we had the quarantine specialist.
Yeah.
So, and that was me in that game, you know, who had to basically just run around and stick the quarantine stickers, the quarantine markers on those yellow cities because there's nothing else we could do there
no.
and just pray they weren't going to come up, which of course they were because they were going to be the cards that got shuffled back in.
Exactly. So they were always going back onto the deck every time we had an outbreak.
We were staring up the barrel right from the start.
Yes.
Well, we started off quite well. I think we cured a disease really quickly.
Yep.
I can't even remember how long, what it was because this is a couple of weeks ago now.
Yeah.
Because, will we say it?
Yeah, well, it went from starting really bad to having a pretty good little run, and then it just blew up in our faces.
Yeah.
And we lost March.
Yeah.
We lost early March.
Yeah.
Which
and
was
our first
loss. Defeat. And it was soul-destroying because it happened so fast.
Yeah, and look, the only good thing to come out of that was, obviously, you still get your game end
upgrades.
Mm-hmm. So because we had eradicated black in that case...
Yep.
We got to add our first positive mutation to black. I think we also added a player ability as our other end of game upgrade. We cried a lot.
Yes.
And we said, damn, if only we had enough time to play this game again right now. But we didn't.
No. So we
had to wait for another week, which was last week. And then we played the second game in March.
Yep.
And this time, obviously, we got no new things come out at the start because we've already done that. This
yep.
time... When the cards came out at the start, it was a really good spread.
It was
great.
It was
looking really healthy.
Yeah.
We cured red fairly quickly.
Yep.
And then things went wrong.
They did. And we had had a... Wow. Sounds wrong. We'd had a constant black problem in in this game because it was all about those black cubes coming out again and again and again. And we, again, got into the same cycle that we'd had with the yellow cubes in the early version of March. In that every time we had an outbreak, we had to all scream back
yeah.
to the sort of Middle Eastern, sort of Eastern Europe area and just try and put out all those black fires that were happening there because these cities were just getting pounded and going from level one to level two.
And because we thought, look, let's try and focus on the whole military base aspect, we took the operations specialist this time,
yep.
which meant we had to leave someone behind. In hindsight, maybe not the best decision. We just hard to tell. We left the medic behind.
Yeah.
So we didn't have anyone that could sort of mop up an area quickly. And in the end, really, that was our downfall.
Yes.
We ran out of black. Oh, we were about to run out of black cubes when we had the outbreaks.
Yeah, the yellow just went. But the thing is, we got so close. We were within one more turn. It was Leon's turn. If I had been able to have my turn, we'd be able to pass cards and I would have been able to cure and it would have been fine. Damn that game. The tension, the excitement.
Anyway,
ugh.
we've got April to come after two losses in March. We'll get back into it. Don't worry, we'll tell you all about it. You know, I didn't realise that I didn't say it's episode 98 on the 24th of December, Christmas Eve, at the start of the episode. We built two military bases at the end of the game as our game end upgrades. And... now we've run out of time.
Exactly right.
We have to go.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you all. We'll see you on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.